Welcome to Radio IQ's Virginia On Demand for this Thursday, a daily podcast from Radio IQ featuring the top stories across Virginia. I'm Jeff Bossert. The Virginia Supreme Court has again ruled that voters will get to cast ballots on a congressional redistricting plan that could help Democrats in this year's midterm elections. The court said Wednesday that the April 21st referendum can go forward while it considers a legal challenge to the redistricting plan. Early voting for the referendum is supposed to begin Friday. It comes after the court made a similar ruling in February, stemming from another tangential civil action. Despite the Supreme Court's ruling, one county will start voting late. Brad Kuttner has this story.
In the order issued late Wednesday, justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia said they offered no, quote, opinion on the ultimate resolution of the Republican-led effort to stop Virginia's redistricting effort, but voting should commence Friday. Issuing an injunction to keep Virginians from the polls is not the proper way to make this decision, the ruling reads. Tazewell County, which was barred from early voting until Wednesday's order, should be all systems go. However, reporting by Cardinal News suggests that the locality has not prepared ballots and machines because of the lower court ruling. How that will impact the rural western Virginia county on Friday remains unclear. In a statement, Attorney General Jay Jones praised the ruling, saying, quote, "The court's order is clear. The referendum election will proceed." Filings in the lawsuit to stop the referendum are due just before voting ends in April, a move some say will allow the state's highest court to not get involved. If it passes, the new maps stand. If the vote fails, so does the redistricting scheme. But a recent ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court suspending the use of new pro-Democrat maps in New York State is giving hope to Colonial Heights Republican Senator Glenn Sturtevant.
When one branch of government is abusing the process and breaking the law, we have the judicial branch to step in and address that. And so far, the Virginia Supreme Court has not done that.
The hope is, once Virginia's highest court issues a final ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court could step in. But in the meantime, big turnout for Democrats in primaries across the country Tuesday are reassuring Democrats like Fairfax Delegate Dan Helmer.
And I expect that on April 21st, Virginians are going to show up in droves and help us level the playing field.
Early voting in the redistricting fight starts Friday across the Commonwealth. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Coming up in a little while, a professional writer in Charlottesville is working to help people and their families at the end of life.
There are people who... it scares them. You all figure it out when I'm gone. You know, me and my mom and my dad, we talk about it. Well, if I go, I want you to take some of my ashes and put them here or spend as little money as possible. Those conversations are so important.
Sandy Houseman will tell us about the work of this death doula. Her story is up shortly. State health officials are warning about a measles case in the Lynchburg area. The Virginia Department of Health says a person with a confirmed case of measles was at Central Lynchburg General Hospital's emergency department on Monday from 10:15 a.m. until about 1:15. Officials say anyone who might have been exposed at that location should report it to the health department. People who are not vaccinated for measles should tell their doctor and watch for any symptoms over the next 3 weeks. The number of Virginia students who are being homeschooled has skyrocketed in recent years, surging to nearly 66,000 since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. That marks a nearly 50% increase. While the trend started during lockdowns and stay-at-home advisories, recent data shows the preference for home-based learning has remained strong. Special interests that want to allow online gaming may be one step closer to striking it rich. Michael Pope has the latest from the Capitol.
Online gambling has become one of the hottest issues of this year's General Assembly session. And unlike most stuff that happens around here, it does not fall along party lines. Senate Majority Leader Scott Surovell, a Democrat, says regulating online gaming is the best way to deal with the illegal market that's already flourishing.
The best way for us to deal with it is to license it, regulate it, and tax it. That way we have control over it, instead of having the Wild West of the internet deciding what to do.
That's not an argument that's persuading 3 Democrats and 14 Republicans in the Senate. Here's Republican Senator Bill Stanley of Franklin County.
Researchers say that these products are 10 times more addictive than the slot machine at a physical casino. The claim that legalization curbs the illegal marketplace is just not correct. Pennsylvania's illegal gambling participation grew from 6 to 10% in 1 year after legalization of iGaming. Legalization feeds the black market by normalizing the behavior.
Members of the General Assembly are holding their bets for now. The version that passed the Senate this week has a reenactment clause. Even if the governor signs the bill, online casinos will have to start over with new legislation next year. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
The town of Pulaski is upgrading its water treatment plant. As Roxy Todd reports, town officials say the $25 million project is needed to address critical structural issues and update aging infrastructure.
I'm standing outside a brick building with Pulaski Town Manager Todd Day and Chief Water Operator Josh Hodge. They point out huge cracks in a concrete wall attached to part of the building. Day says this wall has been patched many times over the years, but it's crumbling.
It's imminent. It's absolutely imminent.
You can see it right now. It's leaking as we're standing here.
This wall used to stand before two bodies of water. One was an outside basin to allow sediment to settle. But in the 1980s, the town emptied it to do repairs and built a temporary system. The repairs were never done, and today trees are growing out of the concrete. The temporary system is still being used. It works, and the water coming from this plant is safe to drink. But keeping all this working means long hours for the plant's employees, often more than 12 hours a day. Last year, Pulaski raised water rates for customers to fund an overhaul of this treatment plant, water lines, and a pump station near Gatewood Reservoir, which supplies water to this plant. The reservoir was down 24 feet this winter due to drought. It's still lower than usual, but has gone up in recent months, says Day. He's hoping grants can help cover some of the costs for upgrades, and construction could begin in 1 to 2 years. The project won't replace all the aging infrastructure, so more improvements may still be needed in the future. In Pulaski, I'm Roxy Todd.
Virginia Republicans highlighted the murder of a Fairfax County woman Wednesday in an effort to knock Governor Abigail Spanberger's opposition to agreements between state agencies and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But as state agencies ditch ICE, many localities in the Republican districts were never part of those same agreements. Brad Kuttner has this story.
Stephanie Minter, who you see behind us here today, she should be alive.
That's Colonial Heights Republican Senator Glenn Sturdivant standing in front of a photo of Stephanie Minter at a news conference Wednesday morning, decrying Governor Abigail Spanberger's efforts to pull law enforcement agencies out of federal immigration enforcement agreements.
Now, this is Governor Spanberger's first month in office, and her response has been to weaken cooperation and add barriers to federal law enforcement in Virginia.
By his logic, the undocumented man who allegedly murdered Minter should have been removed by ICE agents under what's known as a 287G agreement. But according to ICE data, only 27 agencies across Virginia's more than 130 localities are in 287G agreements. Among those not in such agreements is Sturdivant's home locality of Colonial Heights. Culpeper County Republican Senator Bryce Reeves said 287G agreements don't matter as much as the support an executive like Spanberger could be offering law enforcement.
I don't have any 287Gs, but I know the numbers that we're exporting out of my district. I just had those conversations over the weekend with my sheriffs. They don't necessarily need the federal money to enforce the immigration policy. They work with their ICE agents. They don't want to be amplified or under a microscope. They just want to get rid of those criminals. And that's what they're doing. So whether you have a 287G agreement or not really doesn't matter.
Legislation that bans localities from entering into 287G agreements is currently working through both of Virginia's legislative chambers. It got zero support from Republicans so far. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
In middle age, many people consider a career change, and one Charlottesville man is going all out. His early resume features some of the best-known children's programs on public television. And now he's working as a death doula, a professional who helps people at the end of life. Sandy Houseman spoke with him and filed this report.
Call and play. Everything's A-okay.
Darnell Lamont Walker began his career as a TV writer with a prestigious fellowship at Sesame Street. From there, he landed writing jobs with Blue's Clues and other shows for kids and was nominated for an Emmy. Now, at the age of 44, his writing career has taken a sharp turn with a new book called Never Can Say Goodbye. It's a memoir of sorts about his time helping people and their loved ones get through what could be the toughest part of life, the end. It's something he's been doing since the age of 13.
Helping my grandmother with her friends, with family who were at the end of their life, you know, planning a funeral, getting closure with relatives, someone to be there as a witness when they do die, to hold their hand so they're not lonely.
And as a young adult, he was forced to confront his own mortality.
When I was 22, I was diagnosed with a blood clotting disorder that could kill me at any moment. Like every day I have to wake up and take this pill to keep my blood thin. And every time I take that pill, I think, if I die today, did I do what I wanted to do? Did I do enough? And I have.
He says thinking about death often makes people anxious, in part because they can't choose the time or the way. But he says there are things we can control, and that could make the end easier.
Planning is love a lot of times. You know, here's how to make sure that my family is fully prepared for that moment so they don't have to worry about figuring out the logistics of it all. They can get to the mourning and to the grieving and to the holding each other up part right away instead of, oh, I have to call the job. I have to figure out where the policies are. I have to do a million things before I can even grieve.
He urges people to talk about their death, to say how they want things to go.
There are people who, you know, it scares them. You all figure it out when I'm gone. You know, me and my mom and my dad, we talk about it. Well, if I go, I want you to take some of my ashes and put them here or spend as little money as possible. Those conversations are so important.
And he's willing to step in when families don't agree.
I've had a client who had converted to Islam and his family was still very Christian. And he wanted a Muslim burial. And his family was very adamant about not letting him have that.
In the end, his client got both a Christian and Muslim service. Today, he shares his thoughts and strategies as what's called a death doula, someone who helps individuals and families deal with the end. That experience has made him less fearful.
You know, there's this beautiful thing I see often that happens with my clients is it always feels like someone's come back for them. Even days or weeks before the death happens, there's someone who comes in the room and they have full conversations.
He doesn't know what happens after that, but hopes it will be the next great adventure. Walker doesn't advertise his services, but word gets around. He claims to receive a call every other day and has helped hundreds of people. He doesn't send a bill, but accepts donations.
If this was my full-time job, I'd be dead broke. I haven't figured out a way to charge dying people or people who are grieving.
He does get paid for public appearances, and he's still writing for children's television.
A studio is allowing me to write an episode about death for kids. And so I was able to create an episode where parents and kids can watch, and parents can learn how to have the conversation with their children. And kids can find ways to also be curious about it and ask questions and know that their questions are important.
He can't say yet who will offer the program or when, but he'll be speaking at Charlottesville's New Dominion Bookstore on March 7th at 7. I'm Sandy Houseman.
In the forecast, very warm with spotty rain chances the next few days. We'll have some clouds and breezy today, a small chance for a shower or two later in the afternoon. Warm highs in the upper 60s to near 80 for Roanoke and Richmond. Pretty cloudy tonight, possibly a shower or two in northern parts of the listening area. Lows tonight in the low 50s, two near 60 for Richmond. And Friday, a mix of sun and clouds, some isolated showers, a storm or two possible by afternoon. Breezy and very warm, highs in the upper 60s to 82 for Roanoke and Richmond. Thanks for listening to Virginia On Demand. A little reminder, subscribe and tell your friends about it. For Radio IQ, I'm Jeff Bosser.